Hello, everybody, and welcome to the very first entry of the Love Song Book Club. Now, this is our 8th book club, I think it was. Let me just double check that. Yeah, this is our 8th book club. We've been doing this for a while now. Most of our book clubs have been about discussing visual novels, specifically key stuff, sometimes anime. But this is the very first time we're getting together to discuss music albums. I think it's like a very dramatic shift from what we usually do, but I'm really excited to get into this. This is something I've been wanting to do for a long time. So I'm your host, Aspidey, and I'd like to introduce our cast today. We have the wonderful Biscuito.
I don't know about wonderful. Anyway, hi, hello.
The lovely CJ.
Why can't I be lovely?
I'm not small.
And lastly, the perfect pie.
I appreciate that epithet.
Bet you do. All right, everybody. So we're going to be talking about an album that most people haven't listened to before now, which is awesome. And I'm very happy that so many people are and getting into it. A lot of people are pretty... They know a lot about Wari no Hoshi no Love Song with Yanagi Nagi and all that stuff. But this is
we're going animations.
Back. We're going back. We're going to an album that is that album, but with less words. And it's just called Love Song. And it is... It's actually a KSL album, coming out just after Clannad, August 31st, 2005. It is KSL 0019er. It is composed and produced by Junmada, which is something that's quite different than Owari no Hoshi, which has a lot of different artists contributing to it. It's actually sung by Ria, who was of Euphonious at the time. I don't know if that's still a thing now, actually. I should probably research that. Who had been
next episode.
Previously known by most people with her work with Key being Clannad, of course, for shoutouts to Meg Meru. Other musicians that participated on the album are Kendi Sato, Achilles Ken, and Weisswurst, who I don't really know much about them, sadly, but I figured it is important to actually point them out their contributions. The rest of the stuff, other than like their piano and electric guitar and violin work that they did on specific tracks that you can all research, I'm not particularly sure who did it. Maybe it was Mirai, I don't know.
Go to VGMDB, they probably have it.
Yeah, probably. And other interesting information about the album is that these, obviously they're illustrations, there aren't any super cool anime things on the internet like they did for Owari no Hoshi. Down the line, but there are quite a few illustrations.
Going to do a podcast of, by the way, like,
yeah,
the book club is extending that far.
But for this, there are illustrations that go with each of the 13 tracks on the album, which are done by Yoshitoshi Abe, who is known for Serial Experiments Lane, as I just found out, and the novels for Welcome to the NHK, which is really interesting.
Okay.
But anyways, yeah, it's a 13-track album. We're going to be talking about the first five today, being Hajimaru no Saka, Ao no Yume, Hoshi naru Ishi, Hashiru, and Hyakunen no Natsu. So let's get in.
Yeah. So, like, as I said, like, music analysis is something that's been very new to me. I'm just kind of dabbling my feet in deep water at the moment. But it's exciting. It's something that I've always wanted to try my hand at. And hopefully this book club... hopefully this podcast specifically can help everyone contribute to the book club, get a better perspective on things and an idea of how to tackle these albums. That's what I'm really hoping like we come out of this today with. So yeah.
Well, actually, first I wanted to address kind of just generally about the album was I noticed that it's more mature than how, like, I did post about this, how normal anime romances kind of are like, once the couple gets together, it's already over. Like, it's always about the chase, kind of. But here we see the more mature themes. It's kind of more, seems to me, kind of more like American stories than the anime kind of stuff.
The aftermath of the relationship.
But, yeah, almost. And we see stuff like obsession in Ao no Yume, or at least I think so. And
yeah, lots of people are really clinging onto that as, like, sort of the dark side of romance.
I actually really did write down our, I guess, protagonist or our narrator that we're kind of listening to. It kind of has some kind of weird voyeurism kind of vibes to it from some time to time. It's kind of weird.
I'll be watching you. Yeah, it's kind of like, it really depends on your interpretation. One person could read these songs and go, oh, that's so sweet and romantic. Another person would really, oh, this guy is actually kind of creepy. Or, girl, we don't really know. We should probably, like, get that out of the way. Like, we don't know the genders of the characters for these songs. We're going to be making some assumptions based on our gut feeling and the illustrations, but it's largely unknown.
Yeah, and some people would, like, actually listen to the songs and hear the word boku and sort of imagine that, oh, yeah, that means that it must be a guy because they're not using the pronoun wadashi. But the thing to keep in mind is that in some poetry, the word boku is just kind of part of the poetic voice. So it doesn't necessarily mean a gender. And so it might be, you know, a female, it might be male. Whatever your interpretation of it is perfectly valid.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for sharing that. I didn't know that moving in that boku was a poetic voice.
In regards to it being kind of a more mature album, I guess the first comparison I'd think of is like, this feels more like kind of like Maida's kind of folk album almost, whereas Awari no Hoshi is kind of like the Iron Maiden because it's got a lot of crazy stories kind of going on. I don't know. It's definitely very different, which I think it's cool that people are noting that they're having quite a different experience with this album, listening to it as opposed to Awari no Hoshi, because it is quite different.
As far as this album goes, you keep on mentioning that people are maybe not as familiar with it as they are with the newer Love Song album, but I actually find myself in the opposite situation because I didn't know about the new album. I've been listening to this album for years, like since I first got into Clannad. So this is like just kind of been in my regular rotation of songs for probably at least 10 years.
Cool.
Wow, that is a long time.
Well, however long it's been out. How long has it been out?
18 years? No, 5.
No.
It was 13? After Clannad,
13,
right?
13 years, yeah, there we go.
Oh, 13 or 12. Sorry.
Okay. I think I downloaded it sometime around like 2007. So, yeah, I've had the exact opposite experience.
Decade. That's crazy. Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure you're an exception there. I'm sure most people are aware of this through the animations of Awari no Hoshi because I know they circulate the internet a lot. It's like, whoa, Maida's doing music for Yunagi Nagi. Like, it was the hypest thing. Mm-hmm. And most people don't even know about Love Song, but yeah, that's awesome that we have someone who's a Love Song veteran here. That makes me really happy.
I guess to go ahead and stray away a little bit from the music and actually talk about songs specifically, we should jump into Hajimari no Saka, The Hill of Beginning. We'll be going through the English titles as we get to them. But we should probably just go ahead and start talking about what each of these songs are about, and just kind of start piecing together ideas of what we think they're about and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Should be interesting. This song, from like a music perspective, this song fits in really nicely as kind of having like a soft kind of nostalgic feel to me, because it's kind of quiet. It's kind of a subdued track. It doesn't really have a whole lot going on. It's just kind of a piano. It's a nice soft intro, and it fits in really nicely before Aono Yume, which kind of really takes off. The song itself seems to be the protagonist or the narrator, I guess, whomever we're in the shoes of. That's telling the story seems to be kind of talking about things in a kind of reminiscent way. They're talking about, let me bring up the,
I think we should just say singer for convenience sake.
Okay, that's fair enough. But they're talking about like this the Hill of Beginning, right? And it seems to me that this song is talking specifically about the Hill of Beginning being a place and not necessarily like the actual beginning of the story. I feel like this is definitely a song that seems to be taking place in what I'll just refer to as like a present time. And I feel like with Aono Yume, we are going to take a step back. And it's this person talking about the past, like they're standing at a point and then looking behind them and speaking about specific ideals about, or specific perspective on a relationship. Details that we don't particularly know about, but a relationship.
Well, I did do a pretty in-depth analysis that I did post on the forum, but I think that this is a lot about acceptance, at least the second half, but I probably shouldn't jump into that quite yet. But yeah, the singer does introduce this idea of a relationship that used to be there, but is no longer present.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that just they look back and then they start looking forward again and just accept what happened and became actually not so much stronger, but they didn't regret what happened before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It seems to focus a lot on this idea that I guess we can talk about for a little bit. The idea of, they talk about, what are the exact words that you use? If it was the two of us, we could do it, is how it's roughly translated. And it seems to be talking about this idea of, in the past, this person and the person they were interested in, he's talking a lot about this idea of, through partnership, life is easy, right? Like, anything can be overcome by two people with one another. So, like, they walk us to kind of being ready to take on anything is kind of, like, this mindset that they seem to have been in, I guess, at the dawning of this relationship at some time. Maybe it had already started for a little while. There's an allusion to, like they mentioned, like, grass being stepped on, and it's kind of like this idea of, like, well, life is going to kind of step on you, right? But then you're just going to kind of persevere and grow back, right? And you're just going to keep going, and it's not necessarily that life stepped on you in kind of a malicious way, but rather that's just part of life. Like, people step on grass. They're not just stomping on grass because, take this grass.
It reminds me of, like, people, like, rising up to the corporate ladder. And just,
yeah, like stuff happens, but you're gonna keep going because, hey, that's life, is kind of a lot of what I got out of this song. And there's a lot of interesting word choice in regards to, like, that feeling. But what's really interesting is how the song kind of counters that point of view, because the singer says rather clearly that that it's not true. Like, living diligently, more than most people do, we have nothing to lose, but that's not true. And I think that's really interesting and worth kind of talking about, this idea, this kind of defeatist idea of...
really rings to me as a person who has experienced tragedy or something which has really, like, kept them down.
It goes back to life's gonna beat down on you, right? It's like, just because you're gonna live diligently and, like, do as much as you possibly can, that does not necessarily mean that you're not gonna get hit with hardships just as hard as you would if you weren't doing anything, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I had a very different approach to this part, and also the part about the grass. First, I'll just go back to the first instance where the singer says, like, strongly denies a widely held belief. When they say people will grow stronger no matter how many times they fall down, that's not true at all. What I got from this was that the singer has had such a, like, a big, like, event occurred to them that they can't agree with a widely held belief at all. Like, they are so isolated from everyone else that it just doesn't make any sense to them. Whereas it makes perfect sense to everyone else. So what I got from this is the singer is isolating him or herself from the crowd, which is just all other people, and only the only people that matter in this song and in all the other subsequent songs are the singer and the love interest in question. Nobody else in the world seems to matter to them.
And then, right, definitely.
And then just going back to the other instance is most likely, or I would interpret as the same thing, just having it twice to point out an emphasis on how strongly they disagree. and also about the grass. One of grass's many symbolisms is about the connection between people, and if that's, like, usually it would grow as normal. Connections get stronger as people, like, talk to each other and stuff, but sometimes they can get stepped on. That's not normal, but, I mean, that's normal, but getting trampled on is more malicious intent, and so it seems like the person in question intentionally severed the connection between the singer and the love interest, and then people don't even look back.
If I can jump in here really quick, as far as that goes, the, you know, stepped on, trampled on difference, the way that shows up in the actual Japanese, it's actually repeating the same word. It's not phrasing it in two different ways. They're just putting stress in two different places in the word. So it's just like, you know, it's like getting stepped on, like, just, I think that's worth pointing out, is just, that was a artistic license on the behalf of the person who's translating, because you normally wouldn't see that sort of, like, direct repetition. It feels weirder in English than it does in Japanese.
I guess
it is kind of the elephant in the room that we don't speak Japanese, at least most of us don't, and the fact that we're interpreting these songs, it's going to be a little game of Chinese whispers, because we are relying on the translations of Shiona Hito, and for all we know, they could be completely off the mark. We can't know that without, like, really having the case. Oh yeah, it's a case of VNs too, but this is much more of a profound difference, because we're not looking at prose here and, like, descriptions of events.
We have only the words to rely upon.
This is very interpretive.
You have the words and the music, if you can pull things from the music.
And if the meaning is lost in translation, that's a big problem, but we try to do the best we can.
Well, something I just wanted to throw out there is that I think my way of kind of looking at this song is probably going to be pretty different than you guys, because I actually haven't had much experience with the translated version. To me, I've just been listening to the song for, you know, however many years I've been listening to it, and so I've internalized the lyrics in Japanese. Now, I don't speak Japanese all that well. I know some words, and I have, like, a sort of vague understanding of it. But I listen to it more in terms of how those sounds go together, how those words go together. And I also come from a musical background, so I'm listening more to the music. So if it seems like I'm not jumping in that much to talk with you guys about, oh, what the song means in terms of the poetry, it's because I'm thinking about something else. So if you don't mind, I'd like to talk a little bit about what I found interesting in the song.
Go ahead.
Well, a few things that I really liked were that this is just a pure piano song. You know, this, you have piano and singer. You know, it reminds me of a lot of great singer-songwriters who perform their own accompaniments, you know, people like Tori Amos and, you know, other musicians like that. And I have this image in my mind of, you know, Rhea sitting at a piano on a stage, you know, performing this song. And there's a lot that also goes with that. For example, the accompaniment is pretty simple. You know, you don't have a lot of motion in the left hand. You know, have some simple chords in the right hand with a few, like, simple flourishes to move between the different chords. And, you know, that was something I found very striking. The other thing that I really liked about it was, if you listen to the bridge, that's where it gets much more interesting. And so that's where you start having these arpeggios in the left hand to, you know, set the chords, while the right hand takes over with the melody. And the right hand hasn't had the melody for the entire rest of the song. That was always for the vocalist. So that also reminds me of, like, these musicians on stage, because, you know, that when they're not singing is when they can really focus on their piano playing. So that was something that stood out to me. And this tiny, teeny, tiny little thing that I noticed, and I don't know if it maybe slipped past people, but I talked about this in my forum post. In one of the sections, let me see if I can find it. So it's the part where she says, but that's not true, that's not true at all, that second time through that phrase. When she says, I stop my feet. I look back from this spot, you know. And that part in the first verse is slightly different. It goes from there and it resolves. Whereas the second time she sings those lines, they play a diminished chord, which means that they take one of the notes and they make it flat, which by doing that, mm-hmm. it makes the chord sound a little bit...
Sounds a little broken.
Yeah, it sounds a little tense. You feel like it has to go mm-hmm. somewhere and it has to finish. And that's one of their ways of kind of sneaking in this repeated phrase that sounds almost exactly the same without it feeling like they're
It's kind of an anxious anything. Feeling.
Yeah. Yeah, so I like that. It's especially good because it's at that anxious part of the song where you're kind of wondering where she's going to go with the rest of the tune.
But so, like, he buys a clock and it's talking about movement of time, sun shining endlessly, the world keeps moving, you know? And it's kind of like... It's like, I'm going to keep using the word defeatist because it's just something that's popping in my head whenever I'm trying to describe the way that this singer's mindset seems to be in a lot of these things, where like they're talking about things and they're very clearly talking about a moment in time where they felt very strongly about someone and that are going to pursue this thing, and that feeling at that time for them was definitely something that was strong and something that was real. But then them looking back now, they're kind of taking note of their foolishness in regards to a lot of things, and it's very interesting. I feel like from these songs, this album is... Each song is a moment in time. I feel as if it is one story, and each song is a different moment in time that I'm trying to, like, timeline out. And you're having different perspectives, as in this person's perspective at this moment in time is kind of what's changing it to kind of, like, sound like it's different stories, but it is one story, if that makes any sense.
Okay.
So, like, this protagonist is looking back to this person that they say that they wanted to be with, right? Okay, looking back, if you and I could be together, we could do anything. This is what I believe in. I'm really glad that I had this feeling. I'm always watching you, and I'm always hoping that, you know, we're gonna do this. And we're gonna move forward. But like. What was the lyric? I'm going to keep having to refer back to lyrics here.
We need to move on.
Yeah, we need to move on. Also, your explanation, I think I get where you're going, but it did somewhere along the way get kind of rambly.
Well, at the very end, the song takes a shift and it specifies, it says, you were concerned, so the protagonist is talking about the other person at this moment in time. That the worn out fingers were sore is roughly translated, but it's basically saying that it feels as if this other person is realizing that, oh, it's too much work for you to do, or it's too much work for them to do, and the person is again being defeatist about this idea, and so they're not actually pursuing the relationship yet in this moment of time. I feel like they want to do it, but then they're being apprehensive, I guess.
Interesting. Just before we move on to the next song, I'd just like to bring attention to Cheska's amazing fan art of Hajime no Asaka, where she's depicted the girl on the bicycle looking down from the hill. I think it's, like, really awesome, and it's setting a great precedent for hopefully more art to follow for the book club. So thank you so much, Cheska, and thank you to anybody who's contributing art for this book club. It's been awesome so far. Okay, next up we got Ao no Yume, which is roughly translated as Azure Dream, or as Helios put it, Dream of Blue. I think they both have slightly different connotations to it. But yeah, it's kind of... I think that's the consensus we had there. It's kind of someone dreaming of blue.
The dream and as deep as the sky.
This one's... this has a very different tone to the first song. It's a lot more trancey, I guess. Much more high energy than most of the album, I'd say.
Yeah, it's a very classic electronic sort of piece.
If I was to put this song somewhere in a timeline, if we just listened to what is the current, I feel like this song, as of right now, is as far back in the past as you could possibly go. Like, this is way back.
Why do you say that?
Well, the song is talking about, like, the first song was about the hill, right? It's like, okay, this is the hill we're gonna the Hill of Beginning, right? And now that we're at the Azure Dream, I feel as if this song is talking a lot about that moment at the beginning of the hill. Like, we're going back, and we're at the start now. Like, the actual start. Does that make sense?
Okay.
Like, this... He's talking about... Or they're talking about in the time, oh man, I'm gonna be... I was really super interested in this person, and now we're at the I am super interested in this person.
I see.
For the most part, this song is definitely, as far as music is concerned, I really like the song. It's really poppy, and it has kind of a lot of hopefulness to it. I feel like the bulk of the story of the song is definitely quite interesting, and it brings a lot of... it starts a story starts to form here, I guess.
Yeah.
I want to go ahead and take note of the ratings of the songs that we have on the forum. The first song, Hill Beginning, is at 3.8 out of 5, and this is at a 4.33 out of 5. It's quite highly rated of the songs, and I think that fits quite nicely because it's really good.
Yeah, I think a lot of people on the forums are also big fans of like trance and electronic music, so I can't say I'm all that surprised. As far as like the music itself goes, the things that really stood out to me were, first of all, the opening. Right after you have the, you know, first little introduction phrase, then you have this huge wash of sound come out where all of the instruments come in, and it's really striking, especially after following, you know, the Hill of Beginnings, which was very subdued piano. That moment, I think, is one of the most striking moments on the album itself. And then the other part that I really liked was the bridge, because the rest of the song, as far as the music goes, are just kind of dropping tracks in and out. It's very standard, like electronic fare. But it's when fun. It's fun. It's good to listen to. But when you hit that like bridge part where it breaks down, you don't have a beat anymore. You have sort of this more, you know, textural sort of trance-like sound. I think that's really interesting. And then it also allows for another big moment in the song when you have that huge thrum with the bass coming back in as just like this big sort of feeling that you can kind of get in your chest. If you put it on loudspeakers, it's the sort of sound that, you know, gets your subwoofer going and shakes your room.
That's right towards the end, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
It's like the last like kind of 70-80% song, which fits really well because that's kind of a... There's like kind of a, when it gets lighter, it's specifically kind of a very dreamy instance. The O's, Eternal Dream, and oh, your hand, and oh, this, that, and the other. That little bit kind of falls into that same point, I think.
Yeah, for sure. That's definitely the part of the song that I'm talking about. And it's, you know, I think it's really cool. I don't know how anybody else feels about it, but at the same time, it also strikes me as being kind of amateurish, because it is very simple. You know, have tracks coming in and out. You know, I can imagine, you know, that's how a lot of people start off mixing music. And it's one of the things I actually find charming about this entire album is that you get this sense that Maeda is just sort of...
It's very raw.
Yeah, it's very raw Maeda. It's not like he has any pretenses. Or like he's trying to fit some specific style. He's just throwing out the music that's in his head. However, it's been bouncing around in there his whole life.
Especially whenever a lot of the stuff is definitely sampled from other works that he has done. So that's definitely one of the cool parts.
Oh yeah, and the synths
are distinctly
also
Maeda music.
Yeah, well, and also the use of synths. It reminds me a lot of the like older VN games before they got a lot of like real instrumentation or better synths. You know, that there is that sort of feeling of, you know, artificialness that comes with it, and it's nostalgic for me.
Interesting. CJ, how'd you feel about this song?
I don't know, Yume, is I didn't really get to analyze it that much, but I can really only go into the lyrics because I do not know music very well, or at least how to analyze it. But yeah, a lot of people were addressing the fact that it sounded kind of actually very obsessive with stuff like...
Go ahead.
Especially the line, "I will destroy everything that gets in your way." Like, you don't get that. You don't get as yandere as that.
I feel like... Well, I don't feel like I wouldn't call it yandere, but... There's, like, a lot of weird... there's something interesting in this song that we're starting to, like, kind of get a bit of the character of the singer. Like, we're starting to kind of see where they were, like, what their mindset was at that time, and some things that aren't quite right. Which kind of starts to bring in kind of the interesting aspects of love in this album, and kind of how it seems to be kind of going through, like a stages of love kind of thing that's really interesting. But also, while at the same time, kind of portraying some mindsets that may not be good ones. Like that one very specifically, it's like the person is, the protagonist is saying that about that person, but like it's also very clear that that person is like they have a clear sight of their goals, I guess is the way that I would put it. You have the protagonist is like following this someone who, this is just my take on the song as a whole, is they're following somebody who definitely has like their shit together, for lack of a better way to put it. Like this girl seems to definitely know what she's doing. Again, I'm assuming genders here. Like they're going extremely fast into their life, like head first. They know what they want, and I think they use the word like travel in there. Like this is the point that the protagonist falls in love. The azure blue being like his love is as deep as the sky or as deep as the sea, as I'm sure many have heard before.
How deep is your love?
Yeah. they refer to the person as a traveler pursuing their dream, and I walk behind you. When you laugh, I laugh. So like they're happy when this person is happy. And all this kind of stuff like that, but it doesn't seem to note much about.
I love
the protagonist. You know what I mean? Like, there's a very clear distinction between the person and who they love, and like you're starting to realize that there's, from the protagonist's perspective, the protagonist is rather bland. Like they keep bringing up that there's really nothing special about them, but there's something special about the person that they're after. And this is a very interesting topic in regards to love, one that I agree with quite a lot, where like you are your own worst critic, and you're going to look at yourself and be like, man, I'm not all that interesting, so why would this person be interested in me, right? So a lot of what they're talking about here is, he says, eternity, essentially, he says, like, eternity came from your words. So, like, his reason to live comes from this person. If you don't exist, I cease to exist, right? Mm. So he's, like, kind of putting in this kind of, he's putting himself in this position where, like, he, like, his life is all about this person and not about his life. Like, their happiness is a dream, but dreams have to be worked towards and not necessarily something that just kind of comes to be, you know what I mean? Like, there starts to become this interesting dialogue about fate, I guess, and actually chasing your dreams, you know what I mean? So, like, that's gonna go back to the term dream, right? To which I will... The word dream is kind of going to be interchanged with something else in the next song. Basically, this person, the sky they see is clear, and this person is chasing that person. And they're never going to be able to actually accomplish anything unless they just kind of throw themselves into it. And this is the mindset that they're putting themselves in. Your dreams are just dreams, and it's an action. Like, he's making it up to kind of be an impossibility for himself. So he's setting himself up for defeat, basically.
Mm-hmm. Did you have any thoughts about how the track kind of just, like, ends on, like, a electronic distortion?
Yeah, I thought that was very interesting. Somebody else commented that this song kind of, like, reminds them of, like a suicide sort of thing, or something like that. And yeah. I think that... that, like, disconnect sound kind of supports that pretty well.
I agree with it, and one of the interesting things is right at the end of the song, it's essentially like the person is kind of they say waking up under the spring sunlight, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so they're waking up from the dream. So their dream is to be with this person, but it is just a dream, and they're kind of like talking about all these wonderful things that could happen, but they're not doing anything to make them happen, right?
Mm, so you think it's more like waking up from a dream as opposed
that
to...
That distortion is like a snapback to reality of, oh shit, that's all just a dream and I'm not doing anything. It's like it's like sucking them back into reality.
I like that interpretation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very similar to the sound that you have when Neo first goes into the Matrix in that movie. And I don't know, maybe there's something there as far as like a pop culture reference, or just like that's worked itself into our imagination, is like that's the sound that jacking out of a dream sounds like.
And like that's another thing about why I really, really, really like the flow of this song musically, because it comes in, it's kicking, it's a banger, as Bone Coast would call it. It's a lot of fun, it's really interesting, but then it kind of changes at the end, and then it kind of goes through a big shift, and like there's one big kind of climax of the dream, and then you get sucked out of the dream. And one of the interesting phrases is the word planet keeps coming up. I don't know how it is literally translated, but the word planet
star
is used here.
It's Hoshi. Hoshi. It could be star.
It could be star. I also wanted to use the term, world in a more literal sense of like, this is reality. So like, like, was I born into a world where this is something that's possible, or was I born into a world where it's not possible? Like, it's almost like an excuse for, oh, well, this existence is just not possible. I can't do this. That person doesn't exist for me. It's all just, it's hooey, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Now,
it's like, I've been looking for this person, but where the hell are they?
You're probably closer to the mark, but I did have a conspiracy theory almost of, like, maybe this love song thing is about reincarnation. And so each of these stories like a different couple that's kind of like meeting together across time and space in different lives. Specifically, this last line here, like, I was born in another planet. Like, I had the sort of more supernatural interpretation of this leads into the next song, where they're specifically talking about spring sunlight again in the next song. A bit far-fetched, but I couldn't.
The next song's got a lot of stuff about like time. The next song I have a ridiculous amount of notes for.
Okay, so moving on to Hashinara Ishii.
My internet died, but I'm back, and I do support that reincarnation theory. I found some evidence of that later on as well.
For me as a whole, I'm gonna go ahead and stick to, I think this is one story, but it's definitely interesting to hear that, and I think towards the end it'll be really cool to, obviously I have looked at all of this stuff before, but I promise I don't remember stuff from, like, the second half of this album. Everything that we're up to now is stuff that I only know quite clearly about, so I'm not spoiling anything, I swear. So that's cool. We have differing things going on here, I think.
Yeah, I want to contrast those different interpretations, because it's very important that we don't get too focused on one interpretation, because it's fucking music analysis.
Yeah. Yeah, well, there's a lot of things about music analysis, and that's what's going to make this fun. It's because, like, there's going to be... people are going to interpret it one way, everyone's going to be able to interpret things differently, but then there's always what's the artist's purpose? Like, there's a whole lot of interesting things to look at in regards to this, just like you would look at with anything else. So it's cool.
So, Hashinara Ishii, the stone that becomes a star. This one's a little bit more down to earth. We hear about a couple, like, strolling on a pathway, finding a little pretty stone in the pavement.
So, let me ask a little question. Okay, let me ask a little question. The stone that becomes a star. What do you think that means?
I was thinking about this before. I was talking to Bionic about this. It didn't actually make much sense at all to me. But I looked at a G-Show and was like, what are maybe some alternate meanings of Hoshi and Ishii? Hoshi didn't give me much, but Ishii gave me another kanji that gave the same pronunciation, which was ishi, meaning dying wish. Now that
isn't that interesting?
That was what I came up with.
Isn't
like
that
maybe
interesting? So check. What about you, Pai? Pai Dango. Oh.
I don't know. I mean, let's see. Well, one possibility would be that Hoshi in this case could mean planet, so it could mean like the stone took on special significance and became as important as a planet or a star. But what do you think?
What do I think? This is gonna be super far fetched, and maybe I'll be able to explain what I think these things are. So, like, I wrote, like, a big block of notes in regards to this, because I was like, what the hell is this stone alluding to? Like, why would this person just pick up a rock? And, like, why is the rock important? Like, I was trying to figure it out. It's like, is there some sort of crazy folklore story about some rock that, like, I don't know about? So, like, I was like, alright, let me think about this for a little bit. So, I'm gonna look at it very broadly, and look at it, like, so, this track, I feel like, is kind of in direct succession to the dream of the second track, right? Like, if you take the dream of the second track being something that is based within reality that just didn't actually turn out as well as the protagonist had been hoping it would, then this is the sequel to that, right? Where, okay, they're together now, right? He managed to somehow push his way to be together with this person, but there's just not enough substance just yet, right? Which is something that's pretty important in a relationship. You gotta kind of bounce off of each other and create something somewhere. So I was like, okay, what the hell is this rock? So, is it their relationship? Is it love? Okay, so the person reaches for the rock because that's just how they are, right? It says like, oh, you're just like that, always kind of rushing blindly at things, right? So I feel like the person that he's interested in ends up being the person that kind of initiates the relationship. Like, I feel like they're the go-getter, you know what I mean? Because they're the ones who got their stuff in order. They're just kind of like, yeah, let's go for it. And protagonist dude is kind of like, oh, I don't really know about all this just yet, but okay, this is cool.
This is probably the song where we have a clear indication of gender based on the illustration.
Based on the illustration, yes. So I'll just flip-flop over to he/she from now on going forward. I would attribute the stone to the love, okay? So that's their love. And her picking up that stone is just kind of her grasping at that relationship and trying to let it be a thing, right? And I feel like the star is the dream or the prayer, right? So I think of stars literally as in up in the sky, so like of the gods, you know what I mean? I like to think this is something that's a bit more evangelical. And, like, it's like, okay, so here's the stone. The stone that is signifying of our love that is going to bring about the star or my wish or my prayer for this to be something. And I think that it's very interesting that CJ brought up the dying wish thing because it's like this person's talking about, he's like, I want to live my life with this person. I would give my life for this person. So that's very interesting, and I think that fits quite nicely with the idea of this kind of being a prayer. That, okay, let this be something, is like the narrator's perspective.
So, one thing I really like about this song is the way that it has kind of a lot of different heritages going into it, if I could talk about that for a moment. So I feel like it has a very strong sort of Japanese heritage and also a very strong sort of Western tradition heritage, both in terms of like the lyrics and in terms of the music itself. So if you listen to the instrumentation, you have a lot of these sort of Western instruments. You have like a drum kit and a bass, and it's kind of like a jam session sort of kit. But you also have some strings that sound very similar to some like traditional Japanese string instruments. And I like that fusion. And I also like that a lot of times in Japanese poetry, you have a lot of talking about, you know, nature and the changing of seasons and things like that. Whereas in Western music, we have a lot more love songs and songs about relationships and romance. And it seems to take both of those things together, where it, you know, talks about this romance developing over the seasons as opposed to talking about nature developing over the seasons. So I just really like that about this song, is it's got both of those things going on with it.
Hmm. I like how there's a return to... There's clearly like a start point and an end point here because of the direct mention of the seasons.
Yeah.
So like they start off as a pair like walking home in a spring sunset, and that's whenever the stone is found. But like everything at this point is like kind of the, it's like a honeymoon phase where everything just looks great. You know, my heart's clear. The protagonist is feeling good about stuff. Nothing in the world matters except for this other person. All I'm caring about, I'm living for this person. Even when they were still alone, it's all just rushing towards trying to build this relationship and get things going. But what I found was a really interesting point is that they said like they dashed ahead so quickly that they didn't even see their footsteps, is roughly what it said. And I thought that this was a very interesting phrase to say. Yeah, there was nothing, no one but you. Yeah, it's just that's all it is. They were rushing so blindly ahead that they didn't see their footsteps, and everyone knows you should probably watch your step in life. You shouldn't just blindly rush into things or you're gonna go running off a cliff or something, right? So, like, it's going against the idea of rushing blindly at things. Like, you should still take steps. Like, you shouldn't be apprehensive, but you need to think about them. Like, you can't just let it be up to fate. You have to actually fight for the dream and not just think that it's gonna, you know, Jesus, take the wheel! You know, like, that's not gonna work out for you. So that was... I feel like that's the most important thing to take away from this song. The protagonist is coming into the situation where they're like, okay, everything is nice and cushy, but I gotta do something. But time is still moving, right? So, like, charisma's not gonna just carry their entire life. Like, they have to have some confidence in what they're doing. So, like, spring grows to summer, and it switches the word to, like, the sun is... It's getting tiresome. Like, the sun is starting to beat down on them or something like that. And it says that their heart hurt. There's nothing but her, and they hugged without words, and it's like kind of building this anxiety between them. Like, something's not quite right at this point. Time passes again, and now it's winter, and he says that his heart is now frozen, right? There's nothing more. So clearly at this point something went bad, and nothing's a memory. It's just a memory now. Like, the stone that was grabbed onto was never made to be anything. It was something that he just wished on, but he never acted upon. And so now he's back to just searching alone, right? Like, I feel like this is a very... It starts off kind of happy, and then it never goes anywhere, and it ends poorly.
It's so depressing.
Yeah, it's very sad.
I know Bonecast had the interpretation that this might be referring to some sort of terminal illness. I'm not sure if I subscribe to that, but it's worth considering.
I'm not sure. It's definitely interesting. I liked that there was the phrase, red fingers? Which I wasn't quite sure how to understand at first. I was like, what the hell does that mean? I guess? Like, I wasn't sure what that meant, but, like, it goes back to, like, the sore hands from...
Someone playing too much guitar?
It goes back to that, and it makes me think that she is showing him her red fingers.
Yes.
So that means that she has been working, right? Whenever it was her that was referencing his hands working too hard to be with her, or at least that's something that's defeatist that he put in his own mind, it's clear that she's working towards it, right? And then they hold hands and stuff, so it's clear that they're together at that point. But I just thought that was interesting because it's showing that, you know, she's still working hard is basically what I put it at. But it doesn't draw any attention to his own, so it's almost as if he's not working and he's just kind of sitting cushy. He's being complacent, I guess.
So to wrap this one up?
Oh, actually, I have a few just quick connections to other songs. The first being Spring Sunlight with Aono Yume. Kind of, that I think that this supports the reincarnation argument that after Aono Yume, then the person was reincarnated into this other person who did... Oh, actually, it seemed more complicated than that. I don't know how to really explain it, but, like, basically, the person, the main character in Hoshinaru Ishii, was kind of, like, chasing after the girl, kind of, but not with, like, real commitment. But then, after, they kind of gained enlightenment, something like that, from whichever... kind of spirit, I guess, from Aono Yume. I don't know really how to describe that, but
kind of like the Aono Yume is like the dream that they woke up from, and now they're literally born into another world, and now they are trying again, and they succeed here. Is that what you're kind of saying?
Kind of, yeah. And so, so they're born in here, and then my heart turns clear. Is like I suddenly realize that this person I really think that they're important to me. And then the next set of lines kind of... What is it? Even on this tedious holiday, I think we have to start something soon. It's like, the person is like, kind of... What's the phrase? Kind of like pumping themselves up to make the commitment and like ask the other person out or something like that. Even for something as lacking as me, I decide to live with confidence. That's how I interpreted that.
Right. Interesting. I kind of viewed that as like a... That's pretty interesting. I like that. That's cool.
I meant for this to be quick, and then it wasn't.
Because this is cool. Like, okay, so like... I guess the way that I perceive what you're saying is that this is, as opposed to this being a new situation, I feel like this is a continuation from them kind of snapping out of it and realizing that they have to do something. And whenever you said the tedious holiday where I have to start something soon, for me that was like kind of redoubling down on the idea that they needed to actually act and work to actually better themselves and become something of themselves for the relationship to work, and not to just kind of to not simply just be, but rather to continue to progress as a person themselves and not focus so much on the fact that they're just living only for this other person and not at all for themselves is kind of how I took it. So I think both views are definitely viable.
Okay, moving on, we have Hashiru, or Run.
So this song is fun.
Definitely.
This song is like another big twist. This song is super bouncy, is like the best word that I could think of for
it's
this song.
It's also reused Syncopated. A few years later for Sire's Root in Little Busters.
yes.
Which is how a lot of people would recognize it.
Are y'all ready for Pi's music lesson for the day?
To get gushy? Yeah.
Oh my gosh. So, I love syncopation. I'm sure that you guys have probably heard the term syncopation. Do you think any of you could try to like describe what that word means in terms of like rhythm or something like that?
When the rhythm of a song moves in an unexpected way and emphasizes offbeats. Okay, I know exactly what... that is without ever having heard that word before. Like, I know exactly what you mean and like how it flows. Oddly enough, I'm gonna just throw out a random band, but if anyone knows who Josh Homme is or ever listened to Queens of the Stone Age, I think they do a fantastic job of doing things like this, of making songs that are just very like, they just sound like they're all broken, but then they all come together for like a really nice chorus. I love songs that do that. That's some talent.
So, a perfect example that comes up in this song is when it's like, Boku wa hashiru, 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 hashiru. Because that repeating note is kind of off in terms of how many
it's the run,
beats
run,
it
run.
Is. Yeah. Uh-huh. So, it will be, on the beat, off the beat, on the beat, off the beat, on the beat,
and it's
off the beat.
So it pounds in that feeling of running. Like, it's like got that kind of bounciness to it, you know what I mean? Like, I love that.
Yeah. So this song has a ton of that, you know, not just in the vocal parts, but also in the bass and in the rhythm.
It's like, yeah, the pitter patter. It's good stuff.
Yeah. So that's like why I'm in love with this song, is it's just dripping with that. And that sort of sound is usually reinforced when you have short notes or staccato notes. Mm-hmm. And you get a lot of that in this song. You know, she kind of bites off the ends of her words. You have a few kind of like hard consonant sounds that, you know, hit right on the offbeats and, you know, that sort of stuff. It's just,
yeah,
it's a song that sounds really tight. And despite the fact that it doesn't have like a bass line that's constantly hitting on the beat, it makes you tap your foot because something has to keep the beat. So it might as well be you.
It's like it's like a beat that's like in there between like the transitions.
Yeah,
like it's almost like it creates like a pseudo beat, and it's super awesome.
Yeah, so this is one of my favorite kinds of music. If you ever like find any funk music is full of syncopated bass lines, which are my absolute favorite way to play syncopation. And so
cool.
Yeah,
we should totally have like a bonus episode where we just share a bunch of music.
So yeah, this is just a great song. It's got, you know, call and response sorts of stuff. I love the filtering that they do. They have like this sort of what I would call like a phone filter, where they do like a band pass on it. So it loses all the low end, it loses some of the high end, and it just sounds kind of compressed. And so you have her going back and forth between the nice clean audio and the sort of like super compressed audio.
Which goes with the beat itself. Quite well, yeah. Like with the ups and downs. Ooh.
Yeah, tasty. And then you've also got like the drum machine. It's all, you know, it's a great mix of like very natural sounding things, like the classical guitar, and very electronic, very artificial sorts of things. This song, it just gets me every time. I love it.
Big ups to Maida and big ups to Rhea for actually singing this song too, because like while it doesn't necessarily have any huge notes, the actual like bouncing around in the range like with the rhythm is very, very good stuff.
Well, and she also sings all of her accompaniment. This has a lot of overdubbing, so she's singing a lot of harmonies with herself. She's singing all of those sort of like backing chorus parts and everything else. It's just, yeah, Rhea's on, you know, full display here. Maeda's on full display here. Awesome song.
Good, love really it. Good depth in the song. Yeah. Well, I guess we could go from that to talking about what the hell is actually going on in this song, which I think fits quite nicely with that description of it. Because I feel like what's actually going on in the song is kind of, we mentioned anxiety in the last song. I feel like there's a sense of urgency in this song.
Definitely.
But at the same time, it's very lighthearted. Like it's like a frolic in the field. Because clearly the protagonist is back in this time, for me, I feel the protagonist is back in their clear heart, bright mindset. And they're like, they're running forward. This is their not looking at their footsteps. Like they're just running forward, getting ready for what they're going to do to get the girl. You know what I mean? So like for this song, I want to place it like after we're kind of still going forward from the third track on this song, I think. I feel like everything has been moving forward still. I feel like, well, I don't know where it is. The song opens up. Somebody asked a question. I think it was CJ. I don't know who it was. Somebody asked the question, CJ, you can remind me, about why are there messages to, or why does it mention gods in here?
Yeah, that's probably the most.
Is something someone brought up?
I don't remember who did that.
Somebody asked that and said that they didn't understand why it was there, and I wanted to talk about it. Okay, I'm going to talk about it right now. So you remember how in the last song I mentioned that like the stars is something that I kind of attributed to a prayer? I feel like in this song, those specific moments are kind of tongue-in-cheek. I don't think this is the protagonist being nice about God in any way. And if you've, you know, read Mida stuff before, he tends to not be.
yeah, Angel Pete.
tends to not be. So, like, he starts out saying, okay, gods would just give salvation to anyone because they're fucking gods, right? Like, they can do anything they want. If these gods are so all-powerful, why do bad things happen? Is, like, essentially what it's saying.
Yeah.
so, they're kind of talking about how, like, talking about fate, how, like, there's no need to work for something if fate is something that exists, is basically kind of what they're saying here in the beginning. So, like, the idea of kind of, like, love at first sight, or, like, people falling in love just because it's fate, is something that, if it's real, then why the hell should you even bother trying to pursue a relationship? Because it's just gonna happen, right? So, it's very tongue-in-cheek, and it's like, so, while people are suffering and salvation is so easy, gods are just kind of sitting back and chuckling at all of our misfortune. Is essentially what it kind of came up to for my perspective.
Yeah, definitely.
What about that second one? The one where it says, for God's giving salvation to anyone is just like someone dropping the axe into the bottom of the water. That's a reference to the folktale of the honest woodsman, where he drops the axe into the water, and then the god comes up and they have like a regular axe and an axe made out of gold, and they're like, which one of these did you drop into the water? And the honest woodsman says, oh, the regular one. And so then the god gives him the, you know, golden one, because he was honest about which one he actually dropped when he was given the opportunity to take the, you know, piece of treasure.
I wanted to ask about that, actually, because I did not know what the hell axe in the water meant. Yeah. So I was like, what does that mean?
Yeah.
I'm very happy that you brought that up, because I was very curious.
Yeah, it's a reference to that folktale. I'm just wondering how it relates to this.
So it's like someone dropping the axe in the water, and they're just patiently waiting for it to happen. So it sounds like it's... So if you took that, it sounds like what he's saying is like, so the gods are going to sit and watch, and they're just waiting to be able to make themselves known, so they can be like, oh, look at how holy we are. Like, doesn't that kind of what that sounds like?
Yeah, okay, I guess so.
They're waiting for that chance is what it says, right? Yeah, they're patiently waiting for that.
Yeah, it's like the axeman dropped the axe into the water, and the person's questioning, like, why the hell was the god sitting there anyway, just waiting for this axe to fall on top of their head?
My interpretation with that knowledge is that it's saying, like, he mentions that gods are all-powerful, so bad things shouldn't happen, but the gods are being greedy because they're waiting for the situation to make themselves known and say, oh, look, I am a god, and look at this godly thing I'm doing, and, oh, I'm going to... what's the word I'm looking for? I'm going to... Essentially saying that the god wants to be praised for their goodwill whenever something bad happens, and not just prevent bad things from happening in the first place.
Could it be something along the lines of the gods are testing humans instead of, like, just saving them? They give them the opportunity to save, like, be honest and save themselves?
Possible. It's possible. It's definitely possible. I'm viewing it much more maliciously just from the tone of the narrator here. But
so how I'm seeing this is, it kind of got into religion a little bit, but it's like saying it's like someone dropping the axe into the bottom of water, waiting for the and then waiting. It's like saying people are acting as the honest axe.
And they want the god to show up and do something.
Yeah, they want salvation The gods can give salvation to anyone. So it's kind of it seems to me talking about the religion, like how in Christianity you would be, if you like believe in God or have faith, then you would be saved.
That's what's going to bring him about. Okay.
The only thing I'm confused about is why this is brought up here.
See, I know where you're coming from, and I think I understand that, but I would just... I'm gonna stick to it being something a bit more malicious, just because of the fact that it was already mentioned before, and, like, this is the second time of it coming up. Like, if it wasn't for that pretense of him already saying that, like, gods are just sitting by laughing, then like I'm not gonna immediately think that that's his intent here, I guess.
Just to shift gears, I want to talk a bit more about these lines of basically he's running until there's nothing left and only his soul that loves you so much. It keeps repeating this, and I think that's...
Oh, like the chorus?
Yeah.
Essentially.
And I... Yeah, I'm trying to make something of this. What does this speak to you guys?
I'll just...
Go ahead.
Okay, how I got this was, like, being a love song. It doesn't matter what you look like, who you are on the outside. Your body doesn't matter, but the person inside does. And so the singer is running, and it doesn't matter who they look like, who they have become, as long as they can kind of be together, they and the love interest, as long as they have that connection and they can be together, as long as they love each other, then they don't. Nothing else matters. The world doesn't really matter, and who they are within the world doesn't matter either.
From this song, I feel like it all starts where, you know, there's the whole gods thing, but then it's like, if there's such a thing as fate, then I don't have to throw this body away just to look for you, right? Like, I don't have to do all this work just to try to find this person, because fate would just take the wheel. So he then says, the message from the stars, which is something that's really weird, and I'm just like, oh man, they're talking about space aliens now, is when I'm gonna flip back to the stone, right? Go back to that other song, because I feel like this is the prayer, right? The message from the stars. Did they get transmitted to someone? It's his prayer, and he's wondering if it's being answered.
God,
because if his prayer is
back.
Answered, if his prayer gets answered, then he doesn't have to erase his loneliness. Now, this is something that I got stuck on for a minute, because, like, what the hell does that mean? There's a lot of English going on here. And the best way I could come up with is, it seems like kind of a roundabout way to say that being alone is okay, because it's going to come with the feeling of desire of not being alone. Does that make sense? You're alone, which means that you're going to get that desire to then work to be with someone. And so you have two sides of this situation where it's like, okay, is my prayer going to be answered? Then cool, I can just sit back and it's going to come to me. Or you can erase your loneliness because you can actually, like, or you can keep your loneliness because that loneliness is going to, like, let you push forward, right? To, like, keep trying to get that other person. So where the interesting disconnect between the singer and the gods comes to this part where I feel like the singer is becoming more empowered in this song, especially with the kind of flowery language that's used whenever he's describing the running, whenever he's chasing after the girl. He's like, running through a world yet unseen kind of sounds like it's again alluding to this idea of moving too quickly and not paying attention to your surroundings. He's basically got horse blinders on, right? He's just running. He's going for the girl. He's surpassing an ocean of blooming flowers. Like, he's going through, everything is pretty and wonderful, and I'm gallantly running through the field through all my happiness, because it's me, this is what I'm doing, and not what the gods are doing. So it's like kind of this empowerment.
Yeah.
I feel like he has almost an overconfidence, because he's like talking about how he's like, I'm going to be confident in what I want to do. But now he's being overconfident. So like it continues to go through this cycle of love is really goddamn complicated. Where like you can't go too far, but you don't want to sit too far back. You have to take things very carefully. You have to look at things very carefully. Because love is confusing as shit. So it becomes a lot of fun. Looking at this song,
yeah, I like that.
Is what the bulk of this song is to me. He doesn't have to shut away his feelings, because he can embrace them and then move forward. The song takes like a little shift whenever he's just talking about meditation, apparently like talking to some cat, which again I probably wouldn't want to take this too literally. But, like, I feel like he gets into kind of a state of mind where he's thinking about the situation that he's in. And he goes back to thinking about the stars again. He says, the cat appears with a voice similar to mine, so it's like he's talking to his conscious. And he says, this is a cold place. And the cold place makes me think of loneliness. Like, man, it's really cold. Like, the world is a cold place. I'm not able to get anything. This loneliness sucks. Mm-hmm. And he goes back to the stars again, and he's saying, in the gate of stars, there's no one waiting. He said, I watched the door closing all by myself.
I honed it on
so that. Whenever he says no one is waiting in the stars, it's almost like he's looking back at that prayer and saying, okay, it's bullshit. Like, no one is listening to my prayers.
Yeah.
Is what I took from that. The one last flip is, like, he says he watches the door close. I don't know if he's, like, if he's saying that he's watching the door close of the gods in his mind. Or when he says that he watches the door close, it makes me wonder if he's talking about, like, doors in regards to opportunities, in regards to, like, what if he's saying to himself that he watched his opportunity close because he was complacent, or he was inactive due to his apathy to not go after the girl because he was waiting to see if the gods did something.
Two different, very different interpretations there.
Yeah, that he missed his opportunity and now the door's closed. That's something that I'm not sure about.
Mm. Anyway,
I had a lot of.
Speaking of running, we need to really run through this because we spent a lot of time on this song.
Because it's so good!
It is good.
My thoughts are on the form, so I'll just say that.
Sorry, CJ, we need to keep moving. and
just run.
Let's just run through. And the final song for this podcast is Hyakuden no Natsu, Summer of 100 Years. Of all the songs, I feel like this is definitely the most sort of straightforward in how it presents a story.
This song
story.
Is so fucking sad!
Yeah.
Oh my god, this song is so sad! Okay, so first of all, this song is called Natsukage.
yep.
Natsukage.
This reminds me of Air so much.
There's a lot of reasons to feel kind of air about this song. Isn't that interesting? But I don't think that you should think about it too deeply. So, does anyone have anything to say about this one? I heard this one trip some people up.
Let me just start off by talking about the music a little bit. So, there's not really a lot to talk about because it just sort of sticks with the same sort of theme here where it just is...
This song is like the complete opposite of Aonayume for me. Where, like, I like this song because of the lyrics and stuff. Like, it's super deep, and I want to talk a lot about that. But as far as the music is concerned, it's not something that I just want to listen to. Like, typically, if this comes up on Shuffle, it's usually one that I just kind of skip.
See, I really enjoy it. It's very meditative, right? It's got lots of, you know, bells.
I don't dislike it. I just don't really jam to it. You know?
Yeah. I mean, it also has, like, a very slow tempo. I mean, you can't jam to this song. If you're jamming out to this song, you're listening wrong.
It's hard for me to listen to this and not just listen to it, like, really intently. Because it's very pretty.
Yeah, it's a very nice song, and something that stands out to me about it is that they do what's called reverse reverb, where some of the sounds in the song actually get louder. They start off quiet and then they get louder before they hit the attack.
Mm-hmm.
They even have one sound in the song that's completely reversed. They took the sound of a jingle bell, which, if you've ever seen that instrument, it's basically like a long wood rod with a bunch of round bells on it. And so they have it going backwards so it rings in. And it sounds really bizarre. And you'll notice it a few times throughout the song. And it, to me, at least, gives the sense that time is kind of moving in both directions here.
Yeah.
You know, it's...
This song, the word that I would use to describe this song, like, and how it just feels, in regards to what's actually happening in the lyrics and, like, how the song flows and how it kind of feels like it's in this kind of interstice where it's just kind of, like, stuck in time. Like, it's, like, not really going forward, not really going back, but we're just kind of sitting, acquiescence is the word that I decided to come up with in regards to this song, and I'm very happy that I chose that word.
What the hell does that mean?
I like it.
Do tell for us less educated plebeians what acquiescence means.
It means like water.
Ah, right. Okay, I got you.
it's like it's it's almost like it can be used as like kind of a way to describe coming to terms in a sense, as well. Like it's kind of a but yeah, that water is definitely a good kind of verbiage to use there.
Yeah, it's got a lot of flow to it. I can agree with that. I get this sort of image of like a rock in the middle of a flowing river where.
And you know, why is that interesting?
The illustration, it's the girl in the river, in the water and stuff.
Fair enough. But yeah, it's a very... I just like this song for that reason, although I can't say that there's a lot to say as far as like chord progressions or anything, because it keeps the same
general tone throughout. It doesn't really go anywhere.
But it's nice.
I feel like me listening to the song, because it is so lyrically driven, even though it's good, I feel like this is one of the songs that just for me, I feel like it kind of overstays a bit. It's a bit too long for not really going anywhere, and that's kind of why I tend to pass it when I'm trying to listen to things, but I do like it. There's definitely nothing wrong with it. It's definitely good. But it's not something that I listen to in pass, I guess. So I guess we can go ahead and talk about, like, what it's about.
Narrative.
So this narrative is very straightforward. I feel like the Summer of 100 Years part is probably a bit confusing to people, but I want to go ahead and throw my... Just start with that opinion. As to what the hell that means. I feel like that phrase is not something to be taken too literally, but...
I know lots of people seem to think this is some sort of like time travel sort of story.
Probably interesting. I'd like to hear that kind of come to fruition over time. I don't have much to say about the summer carrying us to a town that doesn't exist on a map. That part, I'm not quite sure. I didn't really get into my notes that much on that one. I feel like it could mean something, but I'll go ahead and finish what the rest of the song is kind of covering before I get to that part. So, for me, I feel like this is going back again. Like, yeah, I feel like it's being told in... next to present time. So this is as close to the first track as we've been, but it is telling the story of something that happened before Aonayume. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Because for me, I feel like it's not the beginning of the uphill climb, but is the beginning of him finding the girl. Okay? I feel like this is their meeting place. And it starts out where the protagonist here is talking about, only I know this place, it's my hideout, small stream with some rocks, blah blah blah. It's basically some place in the woods. Which we'll go back to Run here in a second. It's a place in the woods that only he knows about, and he's wandering around there and he sees someone someday and it's like, oh hey, there's a person there. I found you dipping your feet. So this is when he meets the girl. He found her there. Okay. And there's a quote here, it's in quotations in the lyrics. It says, I've been living for hundreds of years, so I know everything about you. When it's the time of your death, I will not be beside you, is how it is translated. This is interesting. And I'm just going to make a blanket statement here. Okay, so the 100 years part is an exaggeration. And it's also kind of like, kind of weeby in a sense. Or it's just like, I've been here 100 years. It's like, it's kind of like thinking about a kid who's like, this is his secret hideaway. And he's just like, ah, this is my place. But then on the flip side, it's like, 100 years, it's like, oh, it's been so long since I had met you, right? And it's talking about someone in the past. Now, looking at the illustration, there's something very stark about it. And it's a guy walking up to someone dipping their feet in the river, like exactly as it has said in the song. And there's something interesting. It looks a hell of a lot like the character that we've seen in the illustrations before, but she's all white. What does that make you think?
A spirit of some sort.
White!
Yeah, okay.
So I feel like in this song, the protagonist is going back to the place where he met the girl, and she's no longer there. because he specifically says, as he's describing this area, he's like, 5 a.m, the time when the newspaper comes, kids are in the park, the town goes on, unchanging, I wait for you on the riverbed, I stop my bicycle, and it's the summer that's fading away, right? And it's like, he says, I already noticed that I'm no longer there, and you realize at that point that this is a person who is looking at himself in the past at this area, and he realizes, wait, I'm not there, I'm here in the future. I've grown, and I'm looking to the past. And he says, I'm glad I met you, and I just came here to say that. So, blanket statement, she's already dead.
Yeah, okay, I'm seeing what you're saying now. I think CJ has, brought up the fun comparisons, too.
Yeah, this is, such a very, very cool kind of middle point in this album. Because it makes this huge kind of realization of what is happening in this scene. And I was like, holy shit, this is cool. Which is why I feel like the lyrics in the song are really awesome. And so that's why I use the word acquiescence, because it's like the narrator is there and they're looking into the past, but then they're telling themselves here that it's like, I'm glad I met you, I've aged, and I'm coming to terms with what's happening. And like, they're going to this place, and he says, along with the sunflowers of the fields and run, and along with the illusion being the dream, I bid you farewell. So he's saying, I lost, goodbye.
Oh, I'm getting chills.
Burncast on the chat is just like, holy shit, Biz, you're explaining everything.
You're helping him understand. I didn't get any of that before.
This album is cool!
I think another way that you could potentially interpret it is not as a real person per se, but as almost like a spirit of nature or something along those lines, where, you know, as a child, here's this place that they go in nature, and suddenly they become one with the area, one with like this forest, with this stream. And they kind of have that moment of epiphany where they kind of realize their place within the world. And they, you know, feel like, okay, you know, that feeling of, you know, this is centuries old. This forest has been here before me and it will be here after I die.
There are so many really good, mentions of nature on this album up to this point. Being the forest, being the sun and the sky and the clouds and flowers and grass and like earth is eternal, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a very cool song.
And it makes a very cool point of reference to making them feel very small, and with the world being so very large that the passage of time for them may seem very long and vast, but as far as it is in reference to the world, it's almost nothing. So like, it's like the world keeps moving. It's been moving for millions of years and it will continue to do so regardless of the situation. So you're here now, act now.
Yeah. And it also goes really well with the music itself having kind of that, you know, going forward and backwards at the same time sound.
Yep.
So good.
Yeah, I guess we're getting close to wrapping this up. So we should probably talk about how we feel about Love Song so far. 5 songs in. CJ, where are we at?
So, I mean, the general feeling is that I really, really like these first 5 songs, and I do like the rest of them. But just, you know, these first 5 are, like, my favorites.
Definitely got quite some places to go.
As for the feeling that I get from these songs, it's hard for me to grasp, really, because I know I could have done more analysis on this, but it was really fun to, like, get these realizations and stuff, and connect the dots and stuff, so, yeah.
Ah, such is the fun.
Yeah, I'm enjoying this a lot.
I'm personally really big on concept albums, and I think it's really cool that Maida's big on concept albums too, so I'm not new to this kind of thing. I'm not versed in music like Pai is, which is why it's super cool that he's here, because he can really get into the explaining why I feel certain ways about things. Whereas I can just be like, this is how I feel! and just kind of ogle over the way he describes it perfectly. But that's the coolest thing about a concept album, is that you're never gonna get it on your first listen. Like, it's never gonna be so direct, I don't think. I've never listened to an album and just got it. There are so many albums that I've listened to that are about such, like, very, very specific topics or very, very broad topics, and it has taken me a significant amount of time to even come to a conclusion about what actually is it talking about, and then actually looking it up later and figuring out what the artist was actually talking about, you know what I mean?
Hopefully we can reach some kind of consensus over what Love Song is trying to talk about by the end of the book club. But we'll see. I'm loving this. It's been an amazing ride so far, and just getting to chill for you guys and really think about these songs is such an awesome experience. It's not something I do enough of, I think.
That's what it's all about.
Hi.
I like...
Sorry. Oh, well... I'll just say this. This has been super nostalgic for me. This, like, all of this talk is just kind of taking me back a few years, and I love it. It's great. This time around, I think for the next week, I want to write up my thoughts a little bit earlier, actually study the lyrics so that I can join you guys on kind of discussing the poetry of it and where everything's going. But yeah, so far, I'm, like, really pumped about this album, having a lot of fun.
Sweet. Yeah, thanks for joining us, everybody. Next week, we've got four more songs we're going to be doing. This book club's going for 6 weeks, so we're in for a long haul, guys. So next week is Bokoro no Koi, Hairu no Hane, Gramophone, and Shinwa. And we're going to do all those, and...
Oh, Shinwa, though.
I'm pretty excited.
Shinwa's a banger.
Biz, do you have any last comments?
I do have comments. I just want to throw out that I'm super happy this is actually a thing. Like, I'm really happy this is a thing. I know it's going to be rocky, and, like, not everyone is used to this kind of thing, but I really hope that going forward people get more into it and, like, in that, people getting, because music appreciation is, you have to try not to look at it too carefully, because in the end it's not going to be that much different from, you know, looking into a book or a painting or a movie. Like, try to look at it the same way, because it's still art, it's still trying to do the same things, and have fun with it. And thanks for letting this be a thing, Aspie, and going along with me and Canon saying for like 2 years now, oh, Art no Hoshi Book Club, and all that, but now we're doing Love Song too, and we're getting to push this album and let people listen to this.
Yeah, it's great to get Maida's, like, lesser known work some more appreciation, because I feel like this is some of his best stuff.
Oh, shout out to the people in the chat. Yo, we got my boy Bionic Bone Cuss, Helios Cure Fan, Mama Time, and Peeps Papa Peeps. What's going on, boys?
I'll stop gushing now and close this podcast. So thanks for joining us this week, guys. And we look forward to seeing you on the next one. Hoping for lots of awesome forum discussion. And yeah, we'll see you on the podcast. Catch you around.